Hey, this is Stelly Efti.
And this is Heaton Cha.
And in today's episode of The Startup Trip, we're going to talk about competitive product development.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
Right?
Yeah, so that's what we're calling it.
That's what we're calling. We just coined this. And it's basically a phenomenon that we're seeing in SaaS with some of our companies and our products, where you have software in a category that's competitive, which is most categories.
Yeah, most software, unless you pick a really, really archaic niche or somewhere where there's like only enterprise software.
Yeah. Most of them are going to be very competitive.
Yeah.
And in those categories today, because of the resources that are out there, because of the knowledge, because of the technology, because of the skill and the resources, product development is moving faster and the standards are going up at a faster pace than we ever used to.
Yep.
So both keeping up with that, you know, seeing your competitors adding some things that made you unique, or seeing certain companies that are big categories in your space kind of just copy the little thing that made up your entire product.
Yeah.
Right. And absorb the value that you're offering to the market.
Yeah, and give it to their customers.
Give it to the customers.
Sometimes for free.
For free, right? Where you were the add-on to that platform.
That's right.
Now there's no need to add
anything. Now you will not exist.
Yeah. And also the quality of UI and UX and design speed, the quality of platform parity,
it's all
right?
Up.
It's all up. The customer expects this thing not just to be on the web, but to work on all browsers, on all operating systems, but they also expect it to work on all smartphones, all tablets. They expect a million different things because this is just the standard is moving up really, really rapidly. And I think that's something that, well, if you're already established in a market, it's a pressure, a competitive product development pressure that you're feeling in your space. If you're not, if you're just launching something, I think it is a fact that many people are not yet aware of because it's not been talked about a lot yet. So I think a lot of people that are thinking about starting a business or starting a side business, they're just like, let me have a simpler version of something that's already existing and I'll have my little niche. But then what we see in many categories, the sales categories, sales enablement, quote unquote, category is a great one for this, is that there's all these little tools that are an add-on to a CRM. Let's just call it that, right? They allow you to do
like they track email opens or something.
Yeah, they track email opens, or they allow you to do to send outbound emails in a sequent fashion or something. They start, and then because it's fairly simple to build what they do, but it provides good value, there's like there's a shit ton of competitors. Like that outbound email thing that I described, there is an incredible amount.
This is like the last 18 months.
Yes.
Like since the beginning of last year, you just saw an explosion.
Explosion.
Yeah.
Explosion. And there's 20 companies that just do this thing.
And it is.
I know a guy that's doing this out of the Ukraine that it took them literally like 2 or 3 months and the product looks polished as fuck. Like it just looks great because they didn't have to do a lot of customer development. They knew there's people paying for this. They knew that it creates value. They looked at what other people do. They have great resources to develop and design things. So boom, they have a product that looks great, right? Right out of the bed in a very short period of time. And you have like venture-funded companies and you have single founders. You know, I know a guy in Switzerland that has a product that competes with these venture-funded products. And just from how it works, it does the same
thing. It's not any different.
Right? So you have that. And then at the same time, you have the bigger players in the market that have more complex products that look at this, that look at our customers are paying some extra money for this add-on, and they're thinking, maybe we will add this as a feature functionality.
And it's easy as any company, large or small, just asking their customers, what else do you use?
Yeah.
What else do you use?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
Oh, you like it. Oh, okay. You can't live without it? Oh, okay. We're just going to add it.
Yes.
How about that? They'll be like, oh, yeah, we could cut off that, pay that little company then.
Yeah. So how do we, so this is an issue today. I think that more and more companies are finding themselves in as they continue to do their product development. They see that it's harder and harder to build something that stands out, that is unique, that does things that other products don't already do.
Yeah.
And that delivers that value in a way that makes the user experience like great. Not just okay, but people go, oh, this is really nicely designed. This is really easy to use. This is really fast. This is really reliable. Like that standard just gets harder and harder because more and more amazing products are being developed all around the world that then set a new standard for what people think is great software.
Right. Right?
And if you want to have great software, that's a moving target that never ends.
Yeah, and it didn't used to be like that.
Let's talk about that, the history. You have a much longer history in developing software products than I do. How was it? Was it just slower, the same thing, but much slower, and it's accelerating?
You used to be able to take a feature out of a product and make it much better and create a lot of value for yourself and your customers as a result, where someone didn't need to replace another product to use yours.
Mm.
And usually that happened through you as a founder, future founder, starter of a business, whatever way you want to look at it, creator, looking at a category, using the products and being like, oh, this whole thing sucks, or this part of it sucks. So I think I can do it better. And I think there's other people like me. So then you would literally go build it, and people would actually come to you because that if you hit the mark on that thing being important enough, people would start using your product and they'd use it in addition to the other product. This is like, I would say the way it worked from like, since I started in about 2004, 2005 to probably 2011, 2012. Actually around 08, 09, it definitely got depressed because of the housing market and all that. So there were less startups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But by then Amazon was, AWS was just going at it, right? Providing a lot of value, for very little money in terms of you don't need servers anymore and anything. You just use AWS. And now AWS is like the backbone of every freaking software company that starts, you know. Sorry, all the other cloud companies, but they suck for starting compared to AWS today, whether it's free credits or whatever. So it's easier than ever to build software. In fact, like the multiple iterations of Kissmetrics that we built now can be built in less than a month.
Mm.
The whole thing. And I mean the hard parts of it, the tracking, the analytics, the scaling of it.
Yeah.
If you even remotely kind of know what you're doing as an engineer, you can figure out how to build that thing really fast. Well, before it would take us 3 months, 6 months, 9 months to get it to the same place we can get something in a month today.
Yeah.
So just the ability to create software that's complex, it's just much faster now, right? The ability, when there's a lot of stuff out there, there's also a lot of inspiration you can get. So the more software that's out there, the easier it is to look at it and be like, oh, great. They suck at these 10 different parts of it. We can just go build it. So it's just easier than ever to build more complex software would be the statement I would say. So in that scenario, you're sitting there and you either, one thing that's obvious is you just need to have you need to have a much better relationship with the customer.
Mm.
If you have a much better relationship with the customer, that might help you. Mm. So this is why the crop of us that are doing content marketing to educate the customer, we're building brands. And I know I've blogged about this and stuff and we've talked about it too, but if you're building a brand through content and educating customers, whatever way, it might not be content, it might be other ways, although everything's content, but then what happens is you have affinity at least. And if they have affinity with your brand, then it's likely that it's going to be at least a little bit more stickier or maybe even a lot more stickier than that big conglomerate that's not doing anything for them. For example, the experience, I'll just put you on blast on this, but Salesforce does not tell you how to do sales.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it again. Salesforce does not fucking tell you how to do sales. They just provide a tool that everyone apparently uses. Close.io actually tells you how to do sales. And that's even before you use their product. So then the mentality is, imagine what they can do for me. Imagine how good their product must be if they're already teaching me about sales and they have a product.
Yeah.
So I see that as a key advantage now.
Mm.
And something that I don't think people realize, which is not software. It has nothing to do with engineering, actually. It has everything to do with marketing, maybe sales and positioning and brand. So that's a way to augment this, right? But that still doesn't get you too far, because if you're building a little shit tool that's a feature of Salesforce and you think you're going to take that and build a humongous business on it, those days are gone, right? There isn't probably going to be more tout apps. Right.
Yeah.
Or even more, I don't know, you know, all of them in the space, right? Or yeswares, right? In fact, the classic study now is that Yesware used to exist and a bunch of others that would add a plug, you would add a plugin into Gmail and it would track your opens, help you do emailing. There's a bunch of these, right? But then HubSpot came out with a little tool that's their tool and they put all their marketing, all of it at it. Not all of it, but all of it, right? And there's even been threads on Quora about how, you know, HubSpot is copying Yesware and the founder is going at it. But the fundamental thing is HubSpot discovered there's an opportunity to build a free product just like the other ones and grab market share that they didn't have yet.
Yeah.
Nope. And that keeps happening
because
it's easy to build that stuff, right? And when you're a really large company, it used to be that large companies move slow. Well, there's AWS now. They have a lot of customers already. In software, we're so mature. Even large companies, software companies, these are like the newer crop. I don't mean the Googles and et cetera of the world. I literally mean HubSpot, even to some extent Workday, and a lot of these companies that are SaaS, New Relic, that have gone public. If you're building a little tool for them, watch out. They're actually pretty good at product development. And if they're not as good as you, they can get there much faster than ever before. So you're dealing with this dynamic. So I guess the next step is, what do you do about it?
Yeah, what do you do about it? So I think that... I think you need to realize, that these bigger companies, they're able to move faster than the big companies of the past. And HubSpot is a great example, because what they did is, so when they, before they launched their CRM product, even before they did the small sales little tool and then they did the CRM thing, and before they did the CRM thing, they literally spent months logging into all the CRMs that were out there.
And researching.
Researching, and they created a copy paste. Here's the cool shit that everybody's doing. Yep. And if we do these three things from them and these three things from them, we have something that looks really cool.
Yep.
Right. And their product, like, I can cut out parts of it and I can go over and say, this is where they stole from these guys. This is what they stole from us.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? Who cares?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
That's what they did.
Right. Because it works now. Yeah.
It works for them. They have the teams. They can spin up a 10-person team doing what you just described when you're three people.
But then they have a 1,000-person team that can do the marketing and do the content
sales.
And do the stuff to generate all this traffic to this product,
correct.
Right? So that's something that everybody needs to be aware of. And the only way, so let's talk about how do you react to this.
Yeah.
So I think one thing is already kind of in the middle of what you were describing, which is, can you build a brand? Like, what can you do besides just writing code? If you have just a piece of code, there's nothing else, and people have to magically find it and decide, does it have all the features? Do I buy it or not? And there's nothing else around what you do. Then you're kind of fucked, right? One thing you can do, and you must do in a more and more competitive world, is find other ways to differentiate yourself.
Yeah.
One way of doing that is creating a brand by finding other ways to build a relationship with your customer, being closer to your customer, and creating value for your customer in any way possible beyond just the product that you offer to them, right? So that way, when I there's certain brands I buy where I make the buying decision to that brand prior to looking at the product of the brand. I know I want to buy something from this specific company in this area, and I didn't research all the companies because I already have a prior relationship to them.
Yeah.
I like their quality. I like their story, whatever it is. I like what it says about me if I own this thing. So, and software is never going to be like a luxury product exactly like that, but it's moving more towards that, that space. The other thing you need to do is you need to have a point of view. I think it becomes more and more important to have a really strong point of view, which means either you can keep innovating, they can come and copy what you did. But if while they're copying, you're doing the next thing that's awesome, that's different, then again, the moment they now have something you already have, you have something they don't have, right? So you're competing by innovating. You're competing by creating things. And a lot of, this seems so obvious, but a lot of people, when they start something small, they don't have enough of a point of view, enough of a process of innovating. They don't think beyond that first step. They're like, we have this little idea. It's going to create value. And we're going to develop it. And the moment they have it and somebody copied it, game over. Because now they're in the I'm a big business process where they're like, let me copy what everybody else already has. You're fucked at that point. If you can't come up with the next tiny thing that nobody has that's kind of cool, and then the next tiny thing, and then the next tiny thing, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, tiny things that are innovative don't help.
Yeah. So you're going to have to be able to innovate at a really accelerated rate and invest in the team and the company and the infrastructure to be able to do that. That's very, very hard to do.
It's harder than ever. And because they can do it too. They meeting any competitor,
any
not just a large one.
Yeah.
So I wanted to double down on the point of view thing. Because I think it really just boils down to that.
Mm.
So the thing that came to mind is, in a world where enterprise companies were mainly targeted as Fortune 500 companies back in the day. Mm-hmm. 37 Signals sat there and said, no, there's the Fortune 5 million. I believe they said that.
Yeah.
And those are the people we're targeting. We don't care about the Fortune 500. We care about the Fortune 5 million. That was strong positioning. Yeah. I still remember it. They might have shied away from it now a little bit, but it would still work, right? Which is everyone else is targeting these enterprise companies. We're going to give you a product that's much different for you because you can't use those. Yeah. So it's a classic strategy of go after a customer they're not going after. Yes. So that's one, it still works. The only issue with that is, and I'll pick on HubSpot again in a good way, they decided they wanted customers that were different than the core ones they had on the HubSpot product. So then they build new things and then they go after it just like a startup did.
Yeah.
So and in their case, it's a strategy decision. So here's a statement I would make about that. I think the smaller companies now have to think much more about how they fit in the market and the strategy that they should have over just building a little building a bunch of stuff. The strategy becomes so much more important, even day zero.
Yeah, it's so true. And I want to go back just one step to what you said, because I think it's important to highlight this and understand this, that it's not so much anymore, I think, what is a customer this bigger company is not going after, so let us go after them. Because increasingly, they're going after everybody. But what is a customer they don't value as much?
That we can make money on.
That we can make money on and value really, really, really highly.
Yeah.
Right? That is the thing that you want to tell people is, we care about you the most. And we're going to display that in a million ways. Versus if you go over to this competitor, they'll take your money, but they care about somebody else a lot more. Right? So
That's key. Key. I was just going to say that's what 37 Signals did.
Yes.
Here's what else I'll say about that, because I want to make sure we add even more value to people.
Yeah.
That's like classic disruption. So even that can be really tricky today, because that big company is going to care about that little customer at some point, most likely. If you're targeting it that increasingly. It's definitely not in every market, but it's an increasingly important thing. Like, I'm sure Salesforce would love to have all your customers that you've taken away from them, right? And if they're really slick about it, which they're not in their case, well, they're not yet. Sorry, Stella.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They would go find a way to go after them too, right? One other strategy, so we can throw out some strategies, right, is that I thought up is in my head about this is like, if let's say Salesforce as a CRM tool does a bunch of tasks for people, right? There's other tasks that people need done in sales that they aren't able to do with Salesforce. And I don't just mean software solutions. I mean things like Salesforce doesn't tell me exactly what message I should send to whom and when.
Yeah.
Right? So if you built a tool and it had all of Salesforce's stuff and added differentiation like that, that actually was correct for the customer and reduced friction for them, that's huge. So for example, I think Tout has this, but Tout app has a ton of templates out there that you can literally, I believe, just click and take into their product and send an email with that template. That's game changing for a lot of people. If Tout was better at marketing it, I bet that could be a big differentiator for their product. I don't think they're great at marketing it, but they did step their toe in the concept like that. That's what I mean by there's a bunch of tasks people do. They're only doing a finite amount of them in the current products. Can you find other tasks that help you with marketing, acquisition, or actually embedding it into the product?
Let me ask you something I meant to ask earlier and I forgot about it in the discussion, but I'm wondering how much of this is a cycle in the sense that certain, you know, you have trends and then you have anti-trends, right? So you had the first generation of really cool websites and you had the Amazon and the eBays and all that. And then you had the Craigslist, the counter example of it, shitty looking website, single dude, not a big Silicon Valley thing. And boom, still it had like a massive appeal, maybe because it would look so approachable, maybe it looked less corporate. Same thing, I don't know why, but I always think of like the Match.com versus the whatever, the Millions of Fish or something.
Okay, Cupid, Plenty of Fish.
Plenty of Fish, right? Where Plenty of Fish, especially because it looked so not beautiful.
Ghetto.
Yes, but it had its appeal because free and because, again, it looked like somebody hobby thing or whatever. Yeah. I'm wondering some of the things that were, and then you have also the trend of in SaaS specifically, SaaS product that does everything, and then specialized SaaS product that does one thing really, really well.
Or specialized to one industry, the same thing as something else. So CRM just for hospitals.
Yes, exactly. I'm wondering if we're going through these cycles, and if you know that, you can probably anticipate that and make sure that you're just a step ahead of the next cycle.
I think it's about the cycle in your industry with your customer.
Yeah.
So before it was just big holistic cycles. A lot of the concepts were like bundling, unbundling.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, lots of features in a product, and if you want to compete, unbundle it, take features out, and do something about it, which still works. But I don't think that plays out anymore because it's just so easy to bundle features into a product, right? So you might as well do that. That's what a lot of people think, right? Yeah. And so I think it actually breaks that pattern. But the bigger pattern is in your industry, what's the right approach? And that's why I go back to strategy. Even the point of view thing is a strategy solution, essentially, right? It's the fact that in our market, there is this opportunity for us, and we're going to go attack it because our point of view aligns with that opportunity. Yeah. So back to some things we've talked about in the past, I think you're screwed if you don't do the research up front to understand what your strategy should be, considering your constraints, your resources, and most importantly, your point of view.
Yeah. And point of view has a lot to do with the way you see the world and the way you're going to will the world to go into. Yeah. And also, like, how aligned is that with the strengths of your team, the strengths of who you are in relation with who you're serving and who's competing to serve the same person.
Yeah.
And that's much harder to have, like, to really know who you are, what your identity and point of view is as a company. Just like it's really hard to know who you are as a human being. Like, who am I truly? Yeah. Sort of just trying to be somebody else, trying to be like other people. It's a tough thing. But it becomes increasingly important in a world where if you're trying to just be like everybody else, there's no value in that anymore because there's people that are really great at being that version, and you being the thousands copy is like not interesting anymore.
It's also like it used to be interesting when you could basically do marketing and just get the customer. Now everyone can just do marketing and get the customer. So it's not that interesting to just have a copycat.
Yeah. But okay, so let's talk, let's end the episode maybe with tips, right? Yeah. So you just said something that sparked the tip that I'm going to give, which is, you know, I think that your point of view, the point of view can be in the way that you're approaching your product in the market can be much more broader than just the software itself. And we touched on this a little bit with like, hey, you could service the customer by preloading a ton of templates and telling them how to do certain things. When we talked about marketing, I just thought, you know, you could differentiate, maybe not forever, but for a while, you could differentiate yourself by maybe doing something similar than others, but marketing it dramatically differently. And that could be a branding point of view and a voice, like everybody's super conservative and you're going to be the virgin brand of whatever your SaaS category is, if that's appealing to an audience that cares about it. Yeah. But it could also be that you're choosing a channel that is undervalued by most of them. And you're like, we are experts in this weird channel, and we're going to only hire more people that are experts in marketing in this weird channel. And that's how we're going to really be competitive. Yeah. But you have to have a point of view and a strategy holistically, and not just think we're going to build a feature that we know some people like and pay money for. And then hopefully that's going to grow forever, because in today's competitive market where people can copy your stuff really quickly, where bigger competitors can integrate what you've done, that's a tough spot to be in. And it's a spot where you can be in successful, but you have a very short shelf life. Like, you're in this spot for 3, 6, 9 months, and then all of a sudden your numbers are going down. And if you didn't anticipate that, it's hard. Like, then you're almost dead and you don't even realize it. So think about everything you can do and pick the things that you can be better than your competitors or different in a way that your customer really values.
I love it. I'm going to give a really elementary strategy or tip, which is you should do what HubSpot did and go actually log into all the software, sign up for it, learn about it, see how they're doing things. Because I wouldn't just log in and sign up and figure, take screenshots and all that. I would take all that material, just like you would do in a bunch of customer development interviews, and go figure out what you should do. And I almost cringe at even giving people this advice, because I used to feel like the competitors didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But now in these markets, when you have a ton of them, they matter more than ever. Mm-hmm. And being deliberate about that earlier on in your business will help you just form your strategy. It's not that the competitors matter so you copy them. It's that they matter because you need to understand, what do people care about in these products? What are these products all about? And you should know what the options are out there for what you need to do. The only way to know is by looking at everything out there.
Yeah.
Right. And again, hate saying it because it takes a lot of time and effort, but it can save you a lot of headache because you can essentially predict how customers are going to respond to your product.
All right. I love it. Inconvenient feedback is something that, you know, you rolled your eyes a few times as you were giving this piece of advice. It's the type of thing, we didn't do that. We didn't look at anybody.
Neither did I.
We just had like really strong opinions. Yeah. We went ahead. But as operators of, you know, kind of established SaaS products in the market, and as we're seeing the competitive pressures in the market, this becomes something that's just, you can't be dogmatic about it. It's the practical thing to be much more aware of your competition and what they do in product development than it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how you're going to win.
All right, let's go, Gavin.
Bye.